Thank you. Thank you so much, Maddie. Hi, everybody. I'm Wendy. I'm so happy to be here. A little nervous. Haven't qualified in a minute. So I'm going to start with just my, you know, where I came from and then kind of go into the topic. So every part of my family, both sides, has alcoholism. My both my parents, both their fathers were raging. My mother's father passed of this disease. And her mother died, he died of alcoholism related illness, and her mother died of Al-Anon, neglecting herself and neglecting her illness till it got to the point where she couldn't care for herself, as did my my father's side as well. My grandfather was the alcoholic on my father's side, and his wife died the same way. She had a tumor that she ignored and could have been and was curable, and she passed. Both of them died when they were 17. And they met each other, and they were male and female of the same person. And I used to joke and say they were the epitome of narcissism, which my mother didn't find much humor in, but you know, that they married themselves. And I was the baby. I'm one of four, and I'm the last. I'm the baby, so to speak. I'm 8 years after the last one, after the last child. And so growing up, I was, every time something happened with my mother, because my mother was the primary person for the majority of our lives that we focused on, I would be picked up and whisked out of the room. And I would just be taken away. And I never knew what was going on. I just knew it was bad. And then all of a sudden, at age 10, everybody went away to school. And I was left alone. I think it was like about, actually it wasn't 10, it was 8, because my sister's 10 years older than me. So it was 8, and I was left alone with my mother. So I had a crash course in everything that I was taken out of the room for. It was interesting that no one thought about leaving me alone and that I would be exposed to that. And I learned quickly how to navigate. My mom came in, she was a functional alcoholic. She would come in, put dinner on, get everything ready, and then she would drink and pass out, and I would have to make sure I didn't get burned, take the dog out. She taught me how to get to and from school by myself at a very young age. I took myself down to the village where in New York, that's quite a long trip on the train by yourself as a child. And on from there, I basically slowly started raising myself whenever she wasn't around. However, you know, there's a kind of a contradiction, because she was functional. So she would step in when she needed to. When things got really tough with me, she would kind of show up and then go back to her ways. When I was a teenager, she got sober for 3 months. And in that 3 months, she decided that she was going to put me in Alateen, and that, you know, we were going to be this cohesive unit, because the rest of my brothers and my sister, they were gone and they were, you know, doing their thing. And so she was going to expose me. And I call that my seed. That's when I kind of got the touch of the seed of Al-Anon, and I started waking up and realizing that everybody in my building were all alcoholics. I mean, how do you move to a building in New York and everybody in the building is alcoholics? And the irony is the alcoholics were engaged on whether they were or weren't alcoholics, they were gauged on how they handled their liquor. So if they were functional, if they took care of their kids, if their kids were clean, you know, just things like that. Like, as long as you could hold your liquor and do what you needed to do, you were good. It didn't matter if you were killing yourself. And that was kind of the philosophy I grew up with. When she left AA, she yanked me out of Al-Anon. But the seed was already planted. And I talked incessantly about what I had learned with the people in the neighborhood, and they thought I was crazy. Later on, I went away to college, And there too, we were sitting around in a room one night all watching The Days of Wine and Roses, and it turned into an Al-Anon meeting. It was crazy. Everybody just started talking about addiction in their family. And when I came back, I was academically dismissed. And when I came back, because I wasn't focused, I didn't know how to do this stuff. I came back and lived with my mother and had an awakening that it was still alive and well, and it was really tough. And now I was an adult. So it was like two cooks in the kitchen. And I and my mother kind of had this thing where, because I was an adult, she was kind of entering, like kind of in my life. It became this very dysfunctional engagement. She used to just leave me alone when I was a kid. But when I slowly became an adult, we started getting this really toxic like fight. So what the dynamic came was, I would come home, I would open the door, I would smell the waft of alcohol, and I would walk into the house, and I would look to the side, the food would be on, and I would look to the side, and she'd sit there with her eyes going, and I would ask her, "Are you drinking?" And she would say no, and I would flip the hell out and start screaming and crying and throwing a tantrum. I would go into the kitchen, get my food, go into my room and cry myself to sleep. And that continued. And I found a therapist that suggested I go to Al-Anon again. And I found this room, and Lois was still alive at the time. So Al-Anon was a very different program when Lois was alive. And I went into this room, St. Stephen's Church on 79th Street. And it was ironically, when I was in Alateen, the Alateen was in the rectory. And then I went to the next best place, which was the Al-Anon meeting that took place at the same exact time the Alateen meeting took place. And I went there where it was warm, and I walked in and I was received, but I wasn't used to this attention. But the thing that kept me there was the warmth. I felt, and that people were talking about things that no one talked about in my family. I would point to the pink elephant and people would look at me like I was crazy. And tell me that there was, you know, there's nothing wrong with the way we are. Everybody, that's pretty much to this day with my sister, if I talk to her, she's like, "Oh, everybody's that way. And that makes it okay." Now when I walked into the room, it never, until I was talking to Maddie, I didn't really think of my blackness in the meetings. My mother, when I was younger, put me in a school that was all white. And at that point, the only person that picked on me about being black was a Spanish chick. So it never occurred to me to pay attention to the fact that I was black. And as I grew up in that school, I did deal with racism, but my mom handled it. And so I never, when I walked into Al-Anon, I came in because of alcoholism and because I was in a lot of pain. I didn't think about the fact that I was black. I didn't pay attention to the fact that I was the only black person in the room. However, as time went on, I did start to pay attention that there was like maybe occasionally, I think I noticed when there was like another black person in the room. Whenever a black person walked in, I was like, oh. It kind of, at that point, it drew attention to the fact that I was the only black person. But other than that, and I wasn't a threat because I was so young. I was 19 when I walked it back in. So no one paid attention. You know, no one was paying attention to me. I mean, they coddled me when I first came in. But as my program grew and I got stronger in Al-Anon, people didn't know how to deal with me because I was this young person. Like, if you wanted to be my sponsor, you were adopting a child pretty much, because I was immature just based on the disease. And but it never occurred to me that I also was black. I was young and black, and to take me on as a young black person, and there were no people of color that had more time than me or more programmed than me. The only people in the room that did were white people. So I just asked people to be my sponsor. And the moment I asked them, they would say yes initially. And then later, every single one of them would come back and say, "You know what, I can't take on the responsibility." And it hurt really badly. But I continued, I stayed in the rooms until I was 30. And I worked my program. I learned how to read in the rooms. I learned how to, because of my dyslexia, I learned how to be comfortable speaking in front of a room. The rooms basically raised me, and within it, I, you know, my confidence grew. But what also happened is, as I got older, I started experiencing, you know, comments like, there aren't many of you in here. And I was like, meaning what? And I just knew to stay away from them because I was here for the disease. This room had saved me. And it wasn't a thought. It wasn't that thought out. It literally was, oh, move away. You know, the stove is hot, move on. And that's what I did. And I stayed in the room. Oh, 5 minutes. Okay. I stayed in the room and continued. And when it came to the steps, at that point, they were having, they were doing these new school kind of forums where you would show, you would sign up and go to the new school, and you could work. They were like a step. I'm trying to think of the name, but they were like step kind of classes that you could go through the steps on. And I did one of those, but you know, you never had that one-on-one. And I did go, you know, I did a little bit of the blueprints, because at the time there were only two books. It was ODAT and it was blueprints. That's all there was. At that point, I got into kind of a little tit for tat with a friend of mine that's been in program forever, because she's like, you know, the big book was never conference approved. Maybe it wasn't officially conference approved, but it was a source that was referred when I came in. They said, go to the big book, and, you know, and they had certain things that they told you to do at that time that they no longer do. But at that time, we were still very close to the program of origin. And so that's what we did. And I remember looking up at the steps at one point, and I was like, oh, make amends. Okay, I'll just make amends to everybody. Because I realized that if I say I'm sorry, because I was, you know, I was invisible in my family, so no one blamed me for anything. So I started taking on responsibility for things and saying, oh, I'm sorry, just to make peace. So I started kind of using the program in a really toxic way to manipulate the room, and started using these, you know, these tools in a way that worked against me. And ultimately what started happening was people started blaming me. They were like, oh, Wendy. And I was like, how did I get in it? I wasn't even there, but I had kind of set myself up. And the other thing I did that was not safe was I spoke to people that were not in the rooms about the program and about the steps. And people that are not in program will use it to the same way I did. You know, if I'm not working the steps, I'm going to abuse the steps. So they would, you know, they would just talk like anti-program, and it became hard. So I had to learn to stop talking to people outside the rooms about the program. And I ended up leaving because I struggled and I was young. I'm just going to close with this. And I left for, I think, about 5 years, 6 years. And I thought that, you know, when I left, that I took the program with me. I was like, oh, I got this. Yeah, no, the program's with me. And it got distorted, like anything. It got distorted, and it started working against me. And I found my way back into the rooms through my therapist, who just kept, you know, just stayed with me. And he was just like, just go, just see what happens. And finally, I walked into this room one day, and someone introduced themselves to me and said, I haven't seen you here before. Welcome. And the other person that I didn't see in the room turned around and said, oh, no. She's not new. She's family. She's been a part of this room for 30 years. And he came over and he said, hello, Wendy, and just gave me a hug. And it was the most wonderful, like, I was back at that point. I did not leave again. And that is something that I got from this room from the moment I first walked in to now, is that there's that person that just touches you in a way that your family should have touched you, that you don't have. And I will close right now with, I just finished last month working my, I started out just working my steps. I went on to my traditions and then my concepts with my sponsor. Last month, and that was huge, and that was amazing. And I recommend it for anybody in the Green Book. Never can remember the name. So anyway, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Wendy. You guys, unmute yourself and
thank
say
you, Wendy.
Thank you, Wendy.
Thank you, Wendy.
Thank you, Wendy. Thank you,
Wendy.
Thank you, Wendy.
Thank you, Wendy.
Thank you, Wendy.
Thank you, Wendy.
Thank you, Wendy.
Thanks, Wendy.
Thanks for the LNP sponsors who were there for you.
Thank you, Wendy.
Wonderful, Wendy.
Thank you.
Great, you guys. Thank you so much. If you want to share or you want to talk to one of our speakers, could you raise your electronic hand? If you're waving the screen, somebody will see you and let me know. And if you don't know how to raise your hand, you can also put it in the chat.